So we're just going to watch one little show, and it's basically just a kid show from the 90s that I just grabbed one episode of. But I think it's kind of interesting, maybe not the show itself. I doubt that you'll find this the most fascinating piece of television you've ever seen. But it's kind of neat in the history of stuff because it's an early example of computer graphics, which again, I think this is something that's more interesting to me growing up with video games. I was always very interested in, computer graphics are so neat because Pac-Man didn't necessarily look like Pac-Man as a stylistic choice. It's because that's kind of the best they could do, and then Super Mario, again, that's the best they could do. And nowadays, it's pretty darn good, like all the Disney cartoons are all computers now, and you can make computer graphics look almost real. But you can really kind of chart how well technology was doing by how the computer graphics were, because they could only do what they could do at the time with the computers they had. So this is just an example, I guess, of where things were in the 90s, what computer graphics looked like at the time. But also, one thing I'll tie this into that I'm sure you're more familiar with. You know the Dire Straits song "Money for Nothing"?
Money for nothing, Egypt's are free. Something's free.
And it was one of my favorite songs as a kid. Not so much for the song, because the song, is just about these like laborer type guys complaining that like, look at these guys, look at these F words on the screen, look at these rock stars. They get their money for nothing. The checks are free. That ain't working. That's the way to do it. I didn't. None of that meant anything to me. But, it's a catchy song, but what I liked about it was the video. Have you ever seen the music video for that song?
I have seen the video of this. I saw it at our house, like every time I walked into the living room.
Yeah, it was one of the most played songs ever on MTV, so I got to assume we had much music in Canada, but probably a similar situation. And yeah, just for the heck of it, to start off, let's watch that because this ties in directly to the show we're going to watch. It's called Reboot. But the guys who made Reboot in the 90s, this was one of their earlier things. This was 1985. And yeah, this video is very early 1980s computer graphics where, it's the two working guys, moving the microwave ovens and moving the fridges around and complaining about these rock stars. But they're like really blocky, really simple 3D animation. But in 1985, when I was a kid, I thought it was the coolest thing ever, just the coolest thing in the world.
You know what? I'm going to really enjoy this because even though they have all that wonderful animation now that looks so realistic, sometimes it's just great to go back to watch something that is basic but really gets the message across. You don't need all that fancy stuff sometime to be really effective.
Yeah, and I mean, like I was saying before too, about the technology levels, like that's one thing I really think is interesting about the history of video games and by extension computer graphics, is it wasn't like an artistic choice in the way that things are with other mediums, Like nowadays, you can choose to write like Jane Austen if you want. You can choose to paint like a Renaissance painter if you want. And nowadays, you can choose to go back to retro graphics if you want. You can make things look like Pac-Man if you want. But back then, they didn't necessarily want to. They didn't want to make this Dire Straits video so simple and so blocky and so basic. They just didn't have any other choice. So I just think it's an art form that is so different from the others because it's gated by technology. Except nowadays, it's kind of not. Nowadays, it's like, whatever, do whatever you want. Who cares? But for the like decades, you could only do as much as you could do. And you'll even see with these, like the difference between 1985 and 1997 is huge. Like the amount that this stuff changed in 10 years. But yeah, to kick it off, let's just watch Money for Nothing, because also it's just a good song, just a catchy song.
Alrighty. Wonderful. It holds up after all these years. Well done.
And I just went and did a quick search. I guess it is. I always thought it was money for nothing and checks, like money checks for free. But then as I was listening to him, I was like, is that just an accent issue or what? Or am I just misunderstanding? And it's chicks, like girls. Money for nothing and chicks for free.
Chicks for free. Yeah. I couldn't quite remember what the word was, but I didn't think it was chicks. I never realized it till now, but the animated characters are very Lego-like. Do you ever notice that? Like they're very blocky, which is why I think it lasts. Lego is still such a big item, big ticket item. So many kids grew up with Lego that this holds up after all these years because that animation is very Lego-like. The little square boxes, everybody's square.
Yeah, and just from a computing standpoint, like it's kind of convenient that it is sort of this sort of simple, timeless look. But from a computing standpoint, yeah, that's just mainly so that they could actually get the thing done with the computers of the 80s. Like, you know, less computations needed. Because even this later show reboot, the main characters were fairly complicated, but a lot of the background characters in reboot are literally boxes, just like three boxes on top of each other with eyes. And that was, again, just so they could actually render out these graphics in time to get the thing done.
But it works, and it's long lasting. It was genius. I'm sure they didn't know it at the time, but it was genius.
Yeah, it's quite surprising, really, how well that ages, because that is kind of the danger of trying to be cutting edge with technology, right? It's like once technology moves on, you don't look cutting edge anymore. But yeah, that definitely does hold up. That is just a cool video. And all the little things, too, of just like, you know, the mouths don't really move or anything. It's just the guy's teeth just blink, you know, blink on and off. But yeah, it's like it symbolizes talking more than real talking. But that's fine. That works.
But they're even able to do little things like that are so subtle, like the tall, thin guy when he's watching the video of the girl with her little panties on there and she's roaming off. And he just has, there's just a little look that they somehow get graphically that, you know, is like, wow, wow. And it's so subtle.
And there is a, you know, a sort of school of thought with video games that it can help to have simpler graphics because it's easier to inhabit that character yourself, you know, or like to think of it as you. Like once somebody gets too realistic, then that's them. That's a separate person, a separate character, a cipher. That's the word I'm looking for. It's like, you know, it's just a stand-in for a human being. It's like a smiley face, you know, it can apply to anybody. And yeah, you can see those workaday men. And like, if they looked like real big, gruff, burly working guys, you wouldn't identify with them as much. But when they're just like simple versions, you're like, yeah, I can understand where this guy's coming from, you know? So yeah, that company, or they weren't really a company so much at the time, it was these two guys. That music video was made by Ian Pearson and Gavin Blair in the 80s. And in 1993, they formed this company called Mainframe Entertainment. And I'd always heard that Mainframe was a Canadian company, and they were, but as far as I can tell, it seems like they're Canadian for tax reasons. You know, those two guys are actually British. So I always kind of thought of this show reboot that they did as like a proud Canadian thing, but I don't know that that's necessarily accurate. You know, it was made in Canada and it's a Canadian company, but the actual guys are British. But you know, honorary Canadians, we're all in the Commonwealth, it's fine. So in 1994, they made this show reboot on ABC. And as far as I know, again, because like computer technology was going along, it was 10 years later, I think reboot is the first full length, you know, like half hour show that was fully computer animated, because it just took a million years to, you know, do computer animation back then. It's just insane. I mean, it still does now, but nowadays they have giant teams of, you know, hundreds and thousands of people at computers rendering this stuff out. This team that made reboot, you know, it was like a handful of people, but they managed to make this half hour show on a schedule and kept it all together. And it was pretty cool, but it launched on ABC, which was owned by Disney. And, you know, as puritanical as ever in the 90s, maybe worse so back then. So this show, it's basically, it takes place inside a computer and the characters are fighting their little wars inside the computer. And then once in a while, whoever in the real world owns that computer, he turns on a video game, and then the video game comes crashing in and they have to take a break to go deal with the video game. And they have to beat the guy. They have to beat the user at the video game, or it'll destroy part of their town or whatever, which is like a neat way for them to just, you know, have side plots based on video games. Must be frustrating, though. Whoever owns that computer never wins a video game. You know, they always manage to beat them. But that's the basic setup of this show. And the big thing with this show is because it was on ABC through Disney, they wanted to make sure that it was totally appropriate for kids, but they went way overboard. Like the stories of the censorship of Reboot, I don't know if it's because it was computer animated and it was a new thing. I have no idea why they had such a bee in their bonnet about this show. But for example, so the main characters were Dot Matrix and her little brother Enzo. So the character of Dot was considered too sexualized by the ABC Board of Standards and Practices, and the animators were forced to make her breasts less curvy and form them into a lumpy mono breast, which is what they referred to it as. So it was like she had like a Pac-Man boob, you know, like one boob that went across her chest and just kind of poked out a little bit. Oh, God. Yeah, it's like you can't ever have two separate boobs. Children are going to watch this show. And there's like a million examples, but this is the one that stood out the most to me. In one episode, a scene of Dot giving her brother Enzo a sisterly kiss on the chin, not even the cheek or anything, on the chin, was cut due to standards and practices fear of promoting incest. So the guy, Ian Pearson, one of the main guys, he said that the insinuation of incest, he described as one of the sickest things I've heard. And it's such a weird irony that those are the censors, you know, those are the people that are supposed to protect the children and keep everyone safe. But they're the ones with these weird ideas in their head that no one else was thinking of in a million years and no one ever would.
Oh, it sounds to me like a lot of those, if they were men, maybe they were women, but they sound like they had a whole lot of repressed sexual desires.
Yeah, absolutely, right? And I mean, I know America is, you know, famous for that, you know, that they, you know, no offense, America, but your the stereotype about your country is you love violence and you hate sex. And in this case, they hated violence and they hated sex. They hated everything. They're just like, apparently it was just brutal working with these people. So they did that for the first two seasons. And then with season three, they severed ties with ABC. And they could finally just, you know, amongst all the other things, I'm just focusing on the mono breast because it ties into the episode we're going to watch. And it's just a funny example. But they managed to stop with the mono breasts. All the adult female characters were replaced with more anatomically correct versions. And then ironically, after severing ties with ABC following the second season, the show reached a greater number of households when it was just in syndication. It wasn't tied to any specific network. Though in Canada, it was just on YTV, youth television. It was just on YTV the whole time, so we had no idea about all this stuff in Canada. But the episode that I thought we could watch, because it's cool just to see how the computer graphics advanced from the Dire Straits days, but it also ties into all this censorship stuff. So season three, no more ABC. They could stop with all these rules. And they went hog wild with this first episode. This first episode of season three, I remember when this came out, when I was like, I don't know, I was like 16 or something. You know, I was starting to age out of like, maybe I shouldn't be watching Reboot anymore. And like, you know, cartoons are starting to lose their interest a little. But then I saw this episode and I was like, holy crap. Like, I didn't know about any of this till later, all this behind the scenes stuff. I was like, what the heck happened to Reboot? Because the video game in this episode is based on the Evil Dead, you know, like Ash in the cabin with the chainsaws and the shotguns and the Necronomicon and the zombies. So it's immediately like guns, bullets, violence. It's like, what the hell is all this? But even better, because they really wanted to stick it to ABC about this mono breast thing. They were really upset about that. So whenever Dot and Enzo go into a game, their clothing changes to match the game. So in this case, because it's this zombie game, Enzo turns into like a Michael Jackson zombie and Dot turns into Elvira with the full Elvira deep V on her dress. Just
the cleavage. Yep.
Just tits everywhere. It was ridiculous. Like the amount of cleavage in this episode when before there was not only no cleavage, there was a mono breast. So this change was shocking. I was like, I can't believe this is Reboot. What is going on here? And yeah, then I went and looked it up on the early internet and I found out about all this stuff. But yeah, it's kind of it's neat on those. Those are the main levels that I think Reboot is neat. It's neat to see the state of computer graphics and it's just neat to hear about Like, you always hear about, like, oh, we had to deal with the network and they've got the notes from the network. But it's rarely as insane as we don't want the older sister to give her brother a kiss because it promotes incest, you know, like totally out of control.
Okay.
So this is Reboot Season 3, Episode 1, To Mend and Defend. And yeah, like I said, it's just they're having these wars within the computer and then they got to go into a video game. And I think all you really need to know is there was a guy named Bob. Bob used to, you know, be the protector of the realm. And Bob is gone. I don't remember what happened to Bob at the end of Season 2. But the big cliffhanger thing is now they got to deal with this situation without Bob.
I come from the net. Infecting systems, people, and cities to this place.
Yeah, it even ends with the everybody laughing at a joke that's not funny. Classic, like, corny, bad TV ending. So, obviously, you know, it's a kid's show. It's like, it's not good.
Now, I can see why, for people of your generation that grew up with video games and everything, I can see why you would really enjoy this show. The animation is really quite good in it, considering how much it has developed in like the 10 years since we saw the Dire Straits video. But storyline and all that, to me, kind of shaky, a little corny. All those references to everybody and their dog.
There's like a little bit of me that is like trying to think back to those days where I'm like, yeah, what did happen to Bob? And that thing where they're like rebirthing hexadecimal, like what happened with that? Like, I don't remember any of this stuff, but I don't think I'm curious enough to actually go rewatch these episodes, you know, but maybe I'll look it up, look up a summary or something. Cause you know, but yeah, also that it, I mean, there was no alternative. Like even that Dire Straits video was not even, I mean, it was only 4 minutes long and it wasn't even fully computer animated. You know, it was like just bits of computer animation. So yeah, Reboot was the only game in town. It didn't have competition. So in that sense, yeah, it was the greatest computer animated show the 90s ever had. But again, yeah, like it was just novelty. It was the underlying show. Yeah, nothing particularly special going on there. But it is funny, just all the stuff I was saying before about the censorship. I mean, yeah, they went all out on that one. Like, I did love the Evil Dead stuff because, you know, also at that time, being a teenager, it's like, yay, Bruce Campbell, Evil Dead, nothing's better than that. And look at that, the Necronomicon and the zombies and everything. Yeah, and just that they did all that stuff. They had shotguns and blowing up skeletons and, of course, Dot's boobs that I think got bigger as the episode went. They seemed to get more and more prominent. And yet the world didn't end, you know? Nobody minded. Nobody cared. It's just some green boobs in a cartoon. Who gives an F? but ABC was making their lives a living hell for 2 years before this. And yeah, and you can just, that's the cool part about that episode. You can feel that sense of them just like shaking off the bad juju. Like, oh, get them out of here. Now we're just going to do all the stuff we want to do. Which again, wasn't even that crazy. It was fairly reasonable.
And many times, if you just produce that stuff and there's no comment about it, there will be certain people that will be astute enough to pick up on every little thing and perhaps see incest on a kiss on the chin. But most people don't. Most people, it's TV. It just, you watch it and it just goes by you and you don't have a whole lot of thoughts on a variety of different levels as to, my God, what was really going on? Was there really an underlying message here that I'm missing? And most people, that's not how it works when you watch TV. You just, well, yeah, you'd see those boobs. Yeah, big deal. So you see those boobs. You know, you're not going to go out and feel you got to feel somebody up because with big boobs just because you happen to see it on a cartoon TV show. So, but when people draw it to your attention, then yes, you say, oh my God, look at those tits. Woo. How on earth does she keep the dress on? You know, they would be flopping right out. They're so huge.
Apologies, by the way, on my end, if anyone hears weird noises. I honestly swear, I don't know what's going on. This little Airbnb I'm at in Taiwan, it's quiet as the grave all week. And then somehow the one day on Saturday night when we record this, I don't know what the fuck's going on out there. They're having like a, some kind of, like, I don't know, like a party in the hallway. But even stuff in that episode, though, I remember reading about later, like even stuff that kind of went over my head. It's like, oh, I guess that was a thing. Like when Dot first gets in the Elvira dress and Enzo's a zombie. So his zombie eye falls out of the socket and bounces up and down. And then I read people later saying that was an excuse that they could do that camera shot of the camera zooming in and out on Dot's chest like a ooga. And I'm like I guess so. Yeah, that probably is what they were doing, but like I didn't catch on to that either. So yeah, like I don't know. It is like it's such a strange thing where you can it says more about the viewer, any of that type of stuff. Like how deep are you gonna see this stuff? Like are you gonna think that a kiss between a brother and sister is too much? But even me at 16, who I was like, cool, look at the Elvira dress. Those are cartoon boobs. But even I didn't catch on that was supposed to be some kind of like zooming in on the boob shot. But apparently other people did. So I guess we all find water finds its level, right? We all decide how perverted we're going to be. But yeah, mostly again, like I was saying, I don't know that there's much to say necessarily about the show because the show is a pretty boilerplate show. But as its kind of place in cartoon history, it's kind of neat because it is such an early computer-generated show. And yeah, there's rarely an example that clear. I guess I could have, if we wanted to sit here all night, I could have showed you an earlier episode with the mono boob. But just imagine that same corny stuff and the same kind of lame kid show, but just with no Elvira and no shotguns. You know? So it seemed quite a big difference at the time. So to finish things off, I got a secret bonus final thing, and I'm not even going to tell you what it is. I think just click on it, and it just ties together some of the stuff we've been talking about, or just TV history in general, and it's just delightful.
Okay. Fabulous. Where did you get that?
Yeah, it was definitely not one of Weird Al's big hits. Like, I'm not surprised you never saw that before because I had forgotten about it too. It was just watching that Dire Straits video. There's this one scene in that Dire Straits video where there's just way too many camera angles. It just keeps switching back and forth. And that's when it came into my mind, like, oh, yeah, brought back that memory of Weird Al, like, looking to the left, looking to the right, looking up, looking down. Like, why is there so many camera angles? What's going on? And this was from his movie, UHF, that sadly was a box office bomb. It came out the same day as Tim Burton's Batman in 1989 and became, you know, a pretty big hit on video later, but huge box office bomb. So yeah, that was just one of the songs that he did for that movie. And yeah, it's incredible how well that fits.
It's perfect, especially anybody that knows the Beverly Hillbillies, that series. Like, that's great.
So yeah, I figured since we were watching Dire Straits and Weird Al's just always good, and you know, since the whole point of this podcast is to watch old TV, I mean, hey, Beverly Hillbillies. We never technically did the Beverly Hillbillies for an episode, but we did.
I was going to say, we never did do the Beverly Hillbillies, did we?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I mean, we could someday, but we watched it so much growing up that, you know, it's not like rediscovering it exactly. And instead, we did Green Acres and Petticoat Junction. So we've done all the adjacent shows. But yeah, I'm sure we'll get to it someday. But just as a nice little taste, a nice little like, the nice memories of Beverly Hillbillies. Like, there you go. Nice memories of Dire Straits, memories of Beverly Hillbillies, memories of Weird Al. Three nice memories.
And Weird Al always does an amazing job on those replicas that he does. They're just amazing. You can't imagine like that kind of mind that guy has to be able to pull all that stuff together and have it flow so smoothly.
Yeah, and a lot of times his versions, they're better, you know? Like, even though I was the perfect age to be like a Nirvana fan, the honest truth is that I liked Weird Al's Smells Like Nirvana before I liked the original Smells Like Teen Spirit. Weird Al's was just better, you know? And then I got into the actual band after. Weird Al comes first, and the actual... It's funny, too, just like when you look back through his career, all the people that he did parodies of, some of them hung around for a pretty long time. You know, like Madonna was around for a long time, for example. But nobody is still around making stuff. And Weird Al is. He's on tour right now. His, I think it was his most recent album, but it was a few years ago, but it hit number one. Weird Al is still going strong. And it's like, yeah, you can't deny that guy. That guy's amazing.
He is. And he sounds so realistic. Like, he's not just some fob off who just kind of pulls out some piece of crap. The songs actually do sound like the original songs. It's just that the vocals are so warped. He's excellent.